To begin, could you briefly summarize your background in the Wisconsin judicial system?
Sure. After practicing law for about 5 years and teaching at Marquette University Law School, I was appointed to the Circuit Court bench in Milwaukee, which is our general jurisdiction court, and served as a Circuit Court judge for 12 years, both city and criminal and civil at different times, and I went through two elections during that time. And then in 1993, Governor Tommy Thompson appointed me to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and the following year I stood for election, statewide election, and was elected to a 10-year term. I stayed a total of 5 years and then decided that I was really cut out to do other kinds of work in the community, so I left the court. So I have a total of about 17 years on the bench in Wisconsin.
How do Wisconsin judges initially get their positions, either by just getting on the bench or filling a vacancy?
We fill vacancies or get to the bench through by constitutional provisions, and our judges are elected in Wisconsin. They run in a nonpartisan race, and what happens is if there is a vacancy on the bench, and this is at any level, Circuit Court, Court of Appeals, or Supreme Court, if there's a vacancy either because of retirement or death or some other way that the judge or justice has left, the governor of the state has appointed somebody to fill that position. The only qualification that one has to have is that one has practiced law for at least 5 years in the state. After appointment, different things happen at different levels. So at the both at the trial court level and the Court of Appeals, if you're appointed, you run in the next available race. So that our races are in the spring, generally in April. So if you get appointed in August, you'll run for the term in the following April. Our terms at the trial court level and the Court of Appeals are 6 years. Anybody who has practiced law for 5 years in Wisconsin can run against you, and so they are competitive races. At the Supreme Court, it's a little different, and this is by virtue of our Constitution. When you get appointed, you will run in the next available race when nobody else is running. We have a provision in Wisconsin that provides that you could only have one justice up at a time. It's really to prevent a little bit of what happened in Iowa a few years ago, which is to have multiple justices leaving and really having substantial turnover in the court, which can be very disruptive to the law. So whenever there's a race in April coming up and nobody's running in that race, you would run in that race. Again, those are elected positions. Anybody in the state can run against you, and those are for a 10-year term.
So does that mean if two Supreme Court justices end up retiring or leaving their position at the same time, would those two positions stay vacant until the next election?
No. The governor would appoint, and he or she would, appoint them in some order, even if they were, minutes apart. The first one appointed would run in the next available election, and the second one would appoint in the next election after that. Now, when I was appointed, for example, the person who I replaced was actually up the following April, so I was appointed in August, and because he was available and there was nobody running in April, then I ran in that race. Some of my other colleagues actually were on the court 4 or 5 years before they had the stand election because there were other justices up. So, no, when there is a vacancy, then the governor will appoint, and then you just have to calculate when you're going to be up to stand for a statewide election.
How does money enter this political process?
Well, that has gotten to be a much bigger problem than when I was running a long time ago. Until probably the last 10 years or so, The money was money that was raised for a particular race. Judicial candidates are prohibited from asking for money themselves, so the judge can't be out soliciting funds, but the judicial candidates, whether it's the judge or somebody else running for the position, basically gets people on his or her team to go out and do the fundraising. We have some public financing, but it's not very much. I think the year I ran, which was a long time ago, there was a cap. You could not raise more than $200,000 or $225,000. And if you did, then you could get public financing. I took public financing, but if I remember right, it was about $12,000. It wasn't much money. But that historically has been the money. Much more money has gone into those races than used to be the case. But where the really big money has come in, and it did not used to exist, is in these interest groups that raise a lot of money. And they, just like in national campaigns and partisan races, they are sometimes raising millions of dollars and technically are not supporting a candidate. They're supporting a position, but clearly they're supporting particular candidates. And in those races, now our Supreme Court races in Wisconsin, it is not infrequent that there are $2-3 million spent between the direct money that is given to the campaign and then the indirect money that comes through the advocacy groups.
How much of this money would you say comes from out-of-state interest groups?
Most of the money that goes directly to the candidate's race usually comes from in the state. A great deal of money, and in most races, it doesn't happen in every race, but most races is actually coming from special interest groups, including a lot of out-of-state money. There's a lot of interest nationally in having input in various state Supreme Courts, because I think that those groups have realized that a lot of laws being made at that level, and they want to have the kind of candidates they can get who will be favorable to whatever their position is, whether it's on products or whether it's business or whether it's unions or whatever it is. So a lot of that money sometimes comes from out of state, but it does come from groups that never were involved in judicial races in the past.
Are there any particularly predominating issues among these interest groups?
Business-related issues, tort reform is important. The abortion issue often is one. I'm trying to think what else. Sometimes there used to be a lot more money put in by unions, but they certainly have lost a lot of influence, membership, and money. So they are not putting that kind of money in anymore. You know, I think it's the kind of interests that they have are often lined up with a particular party's agenda, because so many of the what I call political type decisions are now winding up in the courts. You know, it's exposure to the kinds of liabilities that are resulting sometimes by the kinds of legislation we see both at the state level and at the federal level.
Expanding on that a bit, can you tell me how much money plays a role in potential conflicts of interest? And can you also provide your thoughts on the recent attempt at recusal standards efforts?
Yeah. Well, I have had a lot of respect and continue to have respect to people sitting on the bench. But what becomes a critical problem is the ability for people to have faith in the opinions by the courts. Because if individuals, if people in the community, citizens don't have faith in the courts, then the courts are totally ineffective. And our democracy falls apart. And I think that when people see a judge sitting on a case in which either one of the parties or the interest group that's appearing as an amicus in the case, I can give some examples, have given, you know, tens of thousands, if not even millions, to that judicial race. And then if the judge decides the case consistent with that party or that interest group's position, it is hard for people not to be cynical about why the judge did that. And whether or not it influenced the judge, it doesn't really matter. What matters is how people perceive it. And that has become a very serious problem in Wisconsin. We've always worried about what's the appearance of conflict or what's the appearance of impropriety. And the influx of this large amount of money relevant to cases that the court is hearing is really giving a lot of pause to people that, in fact, it appears as though it potentially could influence the court.
And how about your thoughts on those recent recusal rules that your group tried to pass?
Yeah, I have thought all along as to, we're a group of us, retired judges and justices in Wisconsin, 50-some actually, which is a large majority of the retired judges, were deeply concerned about what was happening in our judicial races, that all this money was coming in, and that there are no rules in Wisconsin about mandatorily getting off a case if there's a conflict because of a contribution. And in fact, our Supreme Court adopted a rule that said a campaign contribution does not in and of itself prohibit a justice from sitting on the case. And so we proposed, and there have been some other proposals, but we proposed that on some kind of limit, and, you know, we proposed an amount. It could be some other amount. There's nothing magical about our amounts, that the justice would have to recuse himself or herself, and it would have to be made public. The number we took was $10,000, which is a big number, but if a justice either in his or her campaign received that or was aware that it was put indirectly into the campaign by a special interest group, the justice would have to recuse themselves. We also built into the rule, and it would take a constitutional change, that another judge, maybe at the Court of Appeals level, could come and sit in so you'd have a full complement of judges. And all of us felt really strongly that it was important to have some parameters so that the parties were entitled to know if somebody who's involved in the litigation, either directly or indirectly, had put a lot of money into that particular judge or justice's campaign, and if it got to be a certain level, that justice would not sit and hear that case. Unfortunately, our court didn't even want to have a public hearing on that rule, and it didn't go anywhere. But I think that's a shame, because I think it could sort of restore some of that faith that the court, you know, is not being influenced by that money, and that if there's too much money in the case, that the judge will get off. The other thing it would do is it would discourage people who have litigation or lots of litigation from putting that kind of money in the campaigns. It doesn't affect people who aren't parties. If you don't have litigation going on and you're not involved, there's no impact on you whatsoever. But the impact is really that the judge will not sit and hear that case if, in fact, there's been a lot of money given to the campaign that he or she was involved in.
With that recent court ruling, then, where do reform efforts go from here?
Well, I can tell you that it is not going away. Even though the court shut down the proposed rule pretty quickly, the judges that are involved in this work, the retired judges, have every intention of finding other ways to raise the issue and continue to lobby for it. There are lots of people in the state who are not lawyers who feel very strongly about this. You know, there have been lots of editorials on it. I just cannot believe that we're going to continue with no parameters on contributions and then sitting on cases. So I don't know that there's a clear strategy yet, but there are daily efforts of organization and ways to try to get the court to reconsider it. It is, I am sure, going to be a major issue in the judicial race for the Supreme Court that's coming up next April. I believe there are at least two of the three candidates have come down very clearly that they believe there ought to be a rule. I'm not sure about the third candidate, whether he has said anything or not. But I'm sure there'll be people, it will be an issue in the campaign, and there'll be a lot of talk about it during that time.
Are there any other organized groups specifically pushing for this kind of reform?
There are, you know, originally it came up with the League of Women Voters, was the organization that was pushing for it when the last rule was enacted. And of course, the Wisconsin Manufacturers Group was the one that came up with the rule that the court ultimately adopted, saying basically that there can't be a conflict just because of a contribution. But I do know that there are lots of lawyers and frankly, trial judges out there who feel very strongly that we ought to do more. And maybe it'll just take a while to have a change of personnel on the Supreme Court. But a lot of people think that we want not only to have a good operating court system, which we have, but also that people have faith in that court system, and that they're not, even on the appearance level, being influenced by any of the money that's being put into those races.
Finally, is there anything you'd like to add that I might not have touched upon?
No, I think, your questions were good. I think in this time of distrust of government, feeling as though money has played such a substantial role in decision-making by those in positions of authority, we need to have maximum transparency and clearly try to find avenues to have people have faith in our government. And in the judicial field, I think it's critical that we have these recusal rules so that people can feel that the judge is deciding the case on the merits and is not influenced by the money that's been spent against him or her or in favor of him or her in a judicial race.
That was Janine Geske. She's a retired Wisconsin Supreme Court justice, currently teaches law at Marquette University, and is a graduate of Beloit College. I'm Chase Cavanaugh, WNIJ News.